This evening we're up to Mitzvah Mem. It's a very small, very small entry. It's a mitzvah right at the end of Parshas Yisro. Mitzvah Mem. It's called Shelo Livnot Avnei Mizbeach Gozit. That the stones that go into the building of the Mizbeach shall not be crafted from metal implements. Okay, this is the earliest time that we find this is a Mishnah in Maseches Midos. I have this, you see this picture book of all the Midos. Midos have nothing to do with good characteristics. Midos means measurements. The measurements of all of the furnishings and the rooms of the Beis HaMikdash. In Perek Gimel, Mishnah Dalet, Maseches Midos makes reference to how the stones came to the temple. Maybe you've seen some of the temple tours, and they show you some of these unbroken stones. They go on like 20 feet in two or three different directions. It's amazing, and that stone is not on the ground. Where you're standing is about 20 feet above the bedrock of that original wall. Right, you know, the Kotel has more Kotel under the plaza than above the plaza. Right? Wow. Much of what you see today as the Kotel was added on by Sheni and even by the Crusades. Okay, especially you know the smaller stones towards the top. The really big stones are from Shlomo, from Bais Rishon, they're much, much lower. And it says in Sefer Melachim that they went to quarry out the stones from mountains nearby, that of course they had to use metal implements. But when they came to bring stone they broke it up there. They came to fit stones on the Temple Mount itself, where it would be put into the Mizbeach. And other stone elements what we call the Azara and the Heichal, these furnishings were put together without Barzel. Okay, if you want to just take a quick look where it says Dinei HaMitzvah in the body of the Chinuch itself. Dine mitzvah kegon mehechan hu mevienu son ha'avanim shabonim b'hen mizbeach. Where did they get the stones from? Shamru zichronam levracha midos perakim mishnah dal I just mentioned. Kimin besulas karka o min hayam hagadol hayu mevienu son. Either from virgin soil or from the ground or from the sea. V'dinim noga barzel ba'even achar shenivneis b'mizbeach in poslos. Or even if a metal implement would touch it after it was already put into the Mizbeach, whether that makes it possible or it doesn't. Hakol, or possible, go, ohi levadopsula, or it's just the place where it touches makes it possible. Umasha amru zichron levracha kishmalabnin nisa Mizbeach pa'amayim b'shana shalo yalabnu b'chli sheyehebo barzel, kadeh shalo yigah barzel b'evin. They would heat up to a very high temperature the Mizbeach to cleanse it twice a year, and they would not do so with red hot or white hot metal, right? Kedei shelo yigah ha-barzel ba-evin, so that stone never touches metal. V'yeser prater mevorim b'maseches midos. And everything you want to know about this can be found in the Masech that I just mentioned. Okay. Now, I just read the dinim of the mitzvah. Now, what the Sefer HaChinuch is most famous for is the Shorosh HaMitzvah. I'm doing this especially here because it's Mitzvah 40, more than any other until now, really needs Mishorshe HaMitzvah. Right? More than any other mitzvah that we've done yet. I mean, you know, it's pretty clear why we're not supposed to commit adultery, or why we should honor our parents, or why we shouldn't steal, or why we should give ourselves a bris, or why we shouldn't eat a certain part of the animal. But, you know, the Torah tells us these things, and some maybe appear arbitrary. Why should we eat matzah when we leave Pesach? Okay, it's a certain remembrance, right? Why should we eat maror? But here, why we should not use any hewn stones as part of the temple complex is really a complex issue. What harm is there? Right? So this is the bread and butter of this book, is that the Torah sometimes gives us mitzvahs and symbols. There's symbolic issues here. If we use metal on the Mizbeach, then we are mixing two different elements of God's world. And it's not, of course, God who did this to metal, Barzel and iron. Man used it. Man made it. Now, like everything in God's green earth, like fire and anything, it can be put to great use, but it can be put to great abuse. Right? Metal has great, great uses. Right? It can be heated up to a high temperature. But alas, man smelted metal for tools of war mostly.
Does he talk about the fact that the Sanhedrin sitting in the Beis HaMikdash complex had to sit in a room of hewn stones?
And it was called Lishkas HaGozis. Look at the name of this mitzvah. Shalaliv Nosav, name is Be'ach Gozis. Yeah, that's perfectly okay, because while it is on Har HaBayis, it's not the Mizbeach.
Right, but it almost seems like the symbolism is trying to tell you something, that Daska, the Sanhedrin, sits in Lishkas HaGozis, but the Mizbeach can't be Avni Gozis.
Absolutely. It's like Nochash and Mashiach. It's like, yes, we will bend this Gozis to good use, but not on the Mizbeach itself. Look, we're going to see another mitzvah coming up, the mitzvah Mem Aleph, which is really, it's so different than anything in the ancient Near East. The ancient Near East temples were places of horrific taking of human life. Of course, animal life also. Horrific taking of human life. Disregard for human dignity. Terrible, terrible arayos. Sexual licentiousness that would make 42nd Street in the 60s and 70s blush. All as part of religious orders. This is what religion had already devolved into by the time that Bnei Yisrael insisted to God that we want the Mizbeach also. And God says, Mitzvah 40 and 41, I think we can do both tonight, is that I expect of you certain symbolic measures in my temple, which I'm begrudgingly allowing you to have, that show you the dignity I expect of you, the humility I expect of you. So much so, do I not want you to reveal arayos in this place, because that's the main diet of the temples of the ancients was sexual licentiousness. They knew how to get young people to the temples. Yodim ha'yu Yisrael shein mamash babad zara lala hatirin gilui arayos neferhesya, says the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Samach Gimel. It was all to be matir them sexual licentiousness in public, not just for their eyes, but for their participation. So Mitzvah 41 says that when you go up to my Mizbeach, do not go up steps. You ever see the Kevesh? You know, I think there should be a picture right here on the front page. No. You can see a little picture here. Can you see the Mizbeach with the smoke coming up? There's a Kevesh there coming up. That's the ramp going up. Okay. Ramp is on the southern side of the Mizbeach. So it has to be a ramp where you take modest steps, gradual steps, as opposed to, now to be sure, there are steps all over the place there, you know. Right? The 15 steps are outside the Har HaBayis. Right? This is the Shaar Nikanor to get into. There's the basement. So these 15 steps where the Levium do their singing, right? Here are 12 steps. It's 12. Okay. So there are steps all over the place. It's just that when you go up to my Mizbeach, I don't want any steps. Now, was ken shatten? I mean, come on. What's going on? It's obviously a symbolic issue. When you walk up steps, you're revealing erva. All right, the men do not have revealed erva because they're wearing breeches. Okay. It would appear from this that, you know, during the time of the temple, even, you know, until Bayis Sheni, that men did not wear breeches. The Kohanim wore breeches. Men wore togas. They wore, you know, like, you know, that's Rashi's explanation that he gave to a student why he wasn't wearing a girdle. He says, today in France, men wear pants. So I'm wearing a belt. The belt is my girdle. In the time of the Gemara, the men wore togas and they didn't have a separation between the Elyonim and the Tachtonim. So the men had to wear a girdle. They had to wear, you know, a belt around in order to daven. But I have a belt. I'm already wearing a belt. Okay. So anyway, in the Beis Hamikdash, the Kohanim are wearing breeches. They're called Michnasayim. And we want to make sure, so much are we careful. It's sort of like over here that, you know, cover the challah so that you don't embarrass the challah because the challah is being pushed off. You know, higher bracha, hamotzi, is being pushed off by a berker gafen. So not let the challah not witness kiddush. So a family who has such a concern for the feelings of challah, hopefully will impart into their children a sense of the feelings of people that aren't inanimate. Okay. That is the, you know, if Moshe Rabbeinu in next week's parsha could not muster up the strength to beat the water that protected him when he was cast into the water with his sister. So how much more so are we supposed to demonstrate the proper sense of gratitude to those who have feelings, right? Who can have feelings about that gratitude. Okay. All right. So that's these two symbolic mitzvahs, if you will, not to build the Mizbeach with metal implements. And that is, as a sign that the Mizbeach is supposed to lengthen life, right? The temple is a place of assuring that life is wholly pure and long. And don't use an implement that shortens life as part of that building. Okay, it's as simple as that. He says, "Mishor shi mitzvah zu shi nikba b'nafsho senu miyoma soso shabesibaso tavolanu mechilas ha'avon v'abracha v'hashalom achreichen." That the whole purpose of building this thing is for our blessings and our peace. So it makes sense that we shouldn't use anything from a kli whose main purpose is to destroy. Right? By the way, there is a custom today in a similar vein that we do not cut the end of tzitzis or tefillin for that matter with something made of metal. I have in my office a very sharp plastic implement. And it's so sharp, it can cut tefillin straps. And if the tefillin straps are too long, so how do you cut them? You cut them with your nut. I mean, you cut scissors, or scissors is made of metal. So specially made to cut off the end of tefillin that were too long, or also to make a clean cut on tzitzis. Right now, they didn't have these implements years ago, so the Shulchan Aruch just says to cut the end of tzitzis with your teeth. that might not also be too clean. You might, you know, you can picture you get, you know, smaller threads, you know, since this is wound double, you know, each piece, you can unwind it. Each of your strands is really two wound together. Right? So it's really 16 strings. Okay, I'm just putting it out there that there are these things of I've never seen, however, a minhag of using a plastic dafka, plastic knife to cut the challah on Shabbos. Although there is a minhag mentioned in the Gemara, actually, that when you bench, you should put away knives.
Yes.
Right there, the Gemara tells a story about a man who was so distraught about saying to a neighbor, "Achamav Yerushalayim," that there was a knife nearby and he stabbed himself or something. But there is a custom like that to put away the knives for benching. Obviously, a bris is, I've never seen anyone use anything but the sharpest of cutters for the bris. Right, the general way is once the edge of the foreskin is put in a clamp, then it's just a quick snip. I mean, the baby is in quite a bit of pain by that time, but the whole thing at that the point of the clamping is a split second of an act. Right, but that's universally done with a scalpel. It's, you know, it's done with a metal implement. You don't want to use plastic in that. Right?
What they do on tefillin before plastic? On the top perhaps.
They have long tefillin.
Yeah, they can probably. Yeah.
They kept winding it around their hand. I don't know.
Maybe. I've seen.
Yeah. Okay, so these are some modern day examples of not wanting to use the metal implement on a on any kind of mitzvah. Now, the prophets did try to turn things around by saying you shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Both Yeshayahu and Micha record this beautiful nevuah of taking these implements of battle, of war, and turning them into bedafka, implements of food gathering. You know, we tend to use metal for forks, spoons, and knives too, right? So there we found some homes where you see stone implements. Those were probably Kohanic homes, because stone is not makabel tumah. Metal very famously is, right? Metal is a very good conductor of everything, heat and electricity and tumah. All right, so it's interesting. I just want to tell you, you may not be aware of this, but there's a prophet in Tanakh. His name is Yoel. A little bit of Yoel is the Haftorah of Shabbos Shuva. And Yoel, maybe snarky, he says, things are going to get so bad that you're going to beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. He takes a very famous nevuah and he undoes it and switches it around and says that you're going to need to to use your peaceful implements for war implements. I might consider that you know this Medina Shel Chesed that where we live, they very often use their soldiers, like for the Peace Corps or you know the, and for food, you know, for when there are food emergencies. So to use soldiers, it's a nice pun between the word milchama and lechem, right? Lo yisagoy al gocherev, lo yomadu al milchama is part of that prophecy of beating the swords into plowshares. And it means that we're going to make positive use of metal, right? And that's what Aaron was saying before. It's a beautiful comment about the lishkas hagozes dafka, is that kimitzion tetei Torah bar Hashem Yerushalayim should be that, just 100 yards away, there's something where we're not allowed to have any guzzes come anywhere near it, to the point that one tana holds that even if it just touches the mizbeach, it'll make that part puzzle. And then 100 yards to the north is a big hall called Lishkas HaGuzzes. All right? Okay, these are the two last mitzvos in Parshas Yisro, and then it moves us right into Parshas Mishpatim. Now, in both these mitzvahs, Mem and Mem Aleph, the Sefer HaChinuch says a formula that he mentions quite often in the book. The mitzvah where he really, really spends the most amount of time on this topic is really fascinating. It's a very famous thing that Nechama Leibowitz translated. I mean, she may have been the first to give it this definition. It's called actions shape character. Have you ever heard of that terminology? Actions shape character.
This is the Chinuch's famous thing, right?
Yeah, and it's
the mitzvah.
Right, yeah. So it's the mitzvah of not breaking the bones of the Korban Pesach,
wow,
which you would think would be a seven-line treatment. No, far from it. The mitzvah of not breaking the bones of the Korban Pesach is this long, long, pages-long treatise where he discusses how why is the Torah so concerned with these shouldn't call pages long in the Minchas Chinuch, it goes on. But why we're so concerned with such minutiae and such detail. So here he says it also. He says, Ki ha'adam nif'al kifi pe'ulosav u'machshavosav holchos la'olam acharei ma'asav. So, ikdamti lacha b'tchila. I've told you this already a long time ago. Yeah, in that mitzvah, right? That you get used to doing certain things, and it creates a mindset, and then you'll create character based on that. Right? Okay. If only the world would get in on this. Too busy rejecting all these things to recognize how much it can help. Okay. Alkein ra'ui lanu la'sos dimyanos ha'pe'ulos kefi kavonos ha'dvarim. Shem Shurfal Hirsch has written a lot about this. And therefore, it behooves us that we should understand the reasonings behind these things and what they're meant to what we might call not losing the forest for the trees, right? Maybe you've heard the story of the Chafetz Chaim who was once over some of Gavir's house, and the mother forgot to put the challah cover on the challah, and the man made kiddush and he was so upset that in front of the Chafetz Chaim, he made Kiddush without a challah cover, that he rebuked his wife right in front of him. And he said, and Chafetz Chaim walked out. He didn't eat dinner there. He said, I'm not eating in a house where someone is concerned with the feelings of the challah, but not concerned with his wife. And the house is this. I'm worried there's no kosher food here.
Right.
Okay, So this is sort of, now, don't lose the forest for the trees. If we're concerned with the feelings of the steps or the feelings of the ramp, so how much more so should we be careful of what this Mizbeach becomes? It was a real concern based on what the Metzius was in the rest of the world at this time. Remember that the Mizbeach for the pagan was, you know, the big three were all in every temple. Avodah Zarah for sure, right? Worshipping the most despicable types of Avodah Zarahs. But there's also Gilui Arayos and Shfichus Damim, right? They're slaughtering virgins. They're slaughtering this Zovchei Adam Agolim Yishakun. They slaughter men, but they kiss their calves, right? So this is, they always considered like Nazi Germany. They had very, very far-reaching animal rights laws in Nazi Germany.
Yeah. These
guys were brent and about their animal rights, right? I don't have to explain the irony. All right, So that's on the Avnei Gazis. And then when it says Shalolif Soam Alam Izbeach, I think what it's capturing basically is that the first one is meant to say, do not let my temple become a place of Shfichus Damim, like their temples are. The second one, don't take large steps up steps and reveal your erva, is that it shouldn't devolve into a place of Gilui Arayos. Okay. So Avodah Zarah, Zichar it is. But the two other problems that the early temples often devolved into is sort of symbolically being gaining some protection with the Mitzvah 40 and Mitzvah 41. Okay. In the Medrash, Hashem tells Bnei Yisrael, listen, I don't eat the korbanos, I don't drink the libations, I don't anoint myself with the oil that you pour on the Mizbeach. That's what the pagans think their gods are doing. I don't need it for those things. Really, chaval on your meat, chaval on your animals, chaval on your resources. Use it for yourselves. I don't need it. But they insisted because they said, why should we serve you with any less fervor and any less resource than the Gentiles of the world serve their gods? Right? It's sort of like Avram Avinu saying, you know, it's not right. All my neighbors have sacrificed a son to their gods, but I've never done that. They look at me as someone who's not as serious about his God as they are. Maybe he was so obsessed about this that he just dreamed about it himself as if God told him to do it. Right? There is such a commentary that says that, which would absolve God of all of Kierkegaard's kashas. All right, so all right, be that as it may, so in this medrash, Bnei Yisrael insist. So God tells them, okay, if you insist, then this is what I insist, is that you follow my plans to a T. Because any deviation from these plans, and I will exact punishment, because I am not going to suffer my place becoming what their places are. Ask Nadav and Avihu about that, okay? And I want to make sure everybody gets that message early on. Okay, what happened by the time of Sefer Yirmiyahu was something so awful, so awful. Chapter 19 of Yirmiyahu indicates, I mean, what could possibly be worse than the practice becoming common in Israel to offer your firstborn child to Molech? What could possibly be the only thing worse than that? Change one word. Offering up your firstborn child to
Melech?
Hashem.
Oh, to Hashem, yeah.
So Yirmiyahu says, very famous. Remember the beginning of Maseches Tainis with Yiftach? It says, Lo Amarti, Velo Tzivisi, Velo Osali.
Right. Yeah, yes.
I didn't tell you. I didn't mean for Avraham. I didn't mean for Yiftach's daughter.
Right, right. For
the Moabite king, you know. So Yirmiyahu says it got so bad. I mean, what is it? What can you call that? Shem Shamayim? It's like it became such a, I mean, I just explained that it's actually Hertz, you know, the Hertz Chumash, the chief rabbi of England, has that as his interpretation in his, you know, the Hertz Chumash with the Haftorahs, you know, it's a very, very, very commonly used Chumash when I was growing up in the Bronx.
Oh, yeah.
It was in every shul before the Arts program. That was the Chumash.
Yeah, I mean, so Sfarim Harbe Inkates. I know originally that pasuk was said, I gave a shir on that this past Shabbos, it was said not to add more books into the canon. But I think it's used today as like every 20 years, is it to be a new sitter, a new, you had the art scrolls. Now you have the Koran sitter. It's very popular now. 20 years anew. What do you do with all those? I mean, you could just give it to enough army bases for the Jews that are on it in the world. I don't know. Otherwise, you got to burn or bury hundreds of siddurim all the time. I just don't get it. Right. America, I think, has had about 10 or 12. Oh, look, there are hundreds of siddurim, different kinds of siddurim. I collect them. But there are some very, very popular. Tikkun Meir, this Brachos Vados, you know.
Birnbaum sitter was the sitter when I was
there. Birnbaum was the sitter. The solar pool, what about, remember that one?
The solar pool, that too. Yeah.
That was big for 20 years.
Yeah.
right? Because, you know, the RCA made it up. So now it's, you know, a so storm harbe in Kates. There's just so much that you can do. The Gemara says, kosve brachas kisorfe Torah, because they all go into Seamus anyway. Right? It is time to get new Sidorim if they're falling apart, no doubt. You should get someone to repair them. You don't want to daven from Gebrachan and Sidorim, at least not in a big Tzibor. There's something special about an Alta Baba praying from a very, very used sitter that's like mamish falling apart and scotch tape. But in Shul, you want to use a nice sitter. I get it. But you don't have to throw out 400 beautiful Sidorim that look fine because a new sitter just came out. All right. Anyway, I've spoken enough about that. The question of God making sure that his holy place should not devolve into what other temples have already become. Think of the worship of Baal Peor and other such outrageous worships. And the Jews, you know, just got into it like everybody else. All right, so this is why the stones that were used for the Mizbeach had to be perfectly smooth.
Were they like the kind of blocks you see, you know, in the Western Wall, or and they were just, they did that at the quarry, or they were not that, they were irregular shaped or whatever, but they were.
No, it was done at the quarry. They could smooth it out, but it was not done with that smoothing process. Once it got to Har HaBayis, was not done by any metal implement. And the Gemara says in Masechet Zvachim that the same way that you check a knife for shechita, right, you have to run your fingernail, and there should be any nicks in the stone. Okay, so.
Wow.
Right. Okay. So.
Was there cement or holding them together or not?
No. I don't think they had cement then. But I think that it was just the weight of each stone on top of the other. They just held them on each one together.
Yeah. Mika Halpern once talked about this, and says truly it was quite an amazing engineering piece of engineering. Truly.
The Kotel is. I mean, how they got same thing. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. So Ibn Ezra explains that when you use a metal implement, some pieces of the stone, which by that time, if they're standing there, are already holy. And, you know, it might lead people to, oh, I got myself a nice little chunk of Mizbeach stone. I'm going to put it on my mantelpiece, you know. And then all of a sudden it becomes that God becomes part of a lot of different pieces, and it's all over the place. And everyone's bragging, 400 different people are bragging that they have a small little stone from the, it's okay if you go to, there's a valley near Beit Shemesh. Uh-huh. I've seen it recently, and there are thousands and thousands of smooth stones there, right? So how do stones get smooth? Usually, you know, a lot of cascading water, and, you know, after hundreds of years, the water somehow, ran off, but the stones remain and the stones stay smooth. So, these tour guides take them and, this guy is selling these smooth stones for like $2 each. And he says, one of these stones may very well be the very stone that David used to kill Goliath. Because they're all very smooth, you know.
Yeah, they're very smooth.
That's in the Tanakh that he had, you know, this in order to they shouldn't be have any friction in the wind before it hits,
Yeah, they're very aerodynamic, right? Yeah.
Ibn Ezra just says very cleverly. He says that, you know, we didn't want to have any curiosity of people, helping themselves to little pieces of Mizbeach stone that fall off from being knocked with a hammer or something.
There were people, there were some famous tshuva, there were people that would take little scrapings from the stones on the kotel, and there's some famous tshuva that it's like a terrible, terrible thing. It's me'ilah.
And it will haunt your house.
Right, right.
So the Rambam writes in the Mor Nevuchim that if the stone cutters were permitted to use like implements, they might want to carve like a little initial into the side of the Mizbeach.
Yeah.
It's, I wonder if the Rambam would allow, you know, in the future to have sponsorships for these, you know, to raise money to build the future Beis HaMikdash, if we're going to be able to have like the, you know, the cats.
Or the, you know, the cornerstone, Schwartz and Gross, 1922, you know, the architects.
Actually, there's a, you know, there's a menorah on your way up the steps. Mamish built to size. You ever see it? It's in a metal casing.
Yeah,
it says the Schwartz menorah on it. At least that we took a picture near it. I don't know if they have a new sponsor now, but that's what it said on it when I was walking by recently. And so that's the you know, the Rambam says that there's this temptation to like carve your initials or some kind of design into it, and that would be you know, that would be wrong.
This is the Jewish disease of plaqueitis, you know. Exactly.
Yeah, but it works. It works. The Rashba is a very famous tshuva of the Rashba. He says to do it because it gets other people to say, I'd like to do that too.
Yeah.
So Barbanel says that cherev is like related to the word chorban. It's interesting. I never made that connection. Right. So by applying an iron tool, right, to the stones, it sort of destroys the original, you know, the simplicity of the stone.
Right.
So and Rashbam says something, it sounds a little like the Rambam. Rashbam was before the Rambam. Is that it shouldn't be like a work of art. It shouldn't be like a sculpture. This is not a sculpture. You're taking something that is part of God's green earth and you're using it to serve Hashem. It's something that God may prefer not to have wanted. But don't become like you know, overcome with the beauty of this. It's not meant to be an artistic element, but a worshipful element. Okay.
Right.
The Ramban disagrees with some of these things because he says that it's not all tools. Iron tools are the ones that are forbidden. Gozis is hewn stone with from iron. But the Ramban says that there were other metals that were very much part of the whole service. There's gold and silver, you know, also metals. Right. So it's that just that iron is associated with making swords.
Right.
Right. And swords is associated with weapons of destruction. That's hashchasa that we said before. Right. Achar b'chos sichye. That's what Hashem told Esav. Okay. But we don't live by the sword.
Right.
We live by the call. Okay, Hevra, I regret to say that the next two Tuesday nights, I am taken up.
You mean Monday?
Thank you. Monday night.
I mean, maybe you have weddings on both nights. But
Yes, I have weddings. And so I may see some of you, but that's I'm sorry, collateral damage. I was thinking of doing once tried to do it sheer from a wedding, but it just there's so much noise at weddings and there's band and there's everything. So I don't know how to.
Yeah.
So I might entertain the idea of taping a class. But then we don't have the give and take, and that's a very, very special part of this learning.
Right.
The give and take.
Does anybody say that the make the dichotomy between like din and rachamim, that like the Mizbeach is really all about rachamim and brings kapara to the Jewish people and to the world. And, you know, swords are associated with like executing people. And like, this is why the Sanhedrin has to be in the Lishkas HaGazis, because that's like justice, but the Mizbeach is really about rachamim, and it can't be. Do you see this idea in any of the commentary?
Absolutely. I think I read it somehow in, which one is closest to this? I think, you know, it's simple. I didn't even mention Rashi. As simple as Rashi is in Sefer Melachim, you know, when he explains why you didn't hear metal implements, Rashi just says, because metal is war, and Mizbeach is life. Right. So just right. Change those words to din and rachamim, and that's beautiful.
Right.
Someone should say it.
Because there are Gemaras that talk about how, like, you know, the karbonos are all about bringing, you know, kapara to the world and rachamim, this is, you know, was it Tanis where Megillah, where Avram says to Hashem, how do I know that you're gonna,
the end, you know, of Tanis.
At the end of Tanis, right? So that's all about, like, you know, yeah, rachamim and forgiving
rachamim. Right. Usually in the time of din, but we beg of you to turn din to rachamim, to turn swords into plowshares, to turn milchama into lechem. This whole thing was about. But especially, it's meaningful that you have the both mem and mem aleph to make sure that the mizbeach doesn't turn into shvichus damim.
Ah, yes.
That's and Eli Arayos, the steps.
Right.
Okay, Chevra.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Kol tov.
Thanks.
And tonight was more in the philosophical notions than in the purely halachic.
Yes. Yeah.